welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from radio's golden age. I'm your host, Mark Levenier. Coming up in this hour, mystery. Later on, we hear Alan Ladd in Box 13. But right now, a very interesting series with only 7 broadcasts remaining from radio's yesteryear, it's Murder Clinic. The show featured famous detectives from week to week, ranging from Agatha Christie's Hercule Poirot to Ernest Brahma's Max Corrados, the Blind Sleuth. This episode marks the first surviving from the series. From August 11, 1942, on the Mutual Broadcasting System, Professor Henry Pajoli investigates the governor of Cap Haitian.
Murder Clinic. Stories of the world's great detectives. Men against murder. The company of the great detectives is small, but their exploits are unique. Each week, WOR Mutual invites you to meet one member of this select band, one great detective in his most exciting case. The curtains part in our amphitheater of mystery. It's dark, except for one brilliant spotlight. And out of the shadows steps Professor Henry Poggioli, Ph.D. The professor is a smallish, dark-eyed gentleman with spectacles and slightly pedantic in manner. Good evening, Professor.
Good evening, Mr. Knight.
You're a psychologist, aren't you, Professor?
Yes, of course. But my experience in crime is purely incidental, and yet, wherever I go, I find myself involved in some strange mystery.
Well, that's very interesting and intriguing. And what particular case is on your mind tonight, Professor?
I think I'll tell you the story of my most famous case, the one that gained me my greatest reputation. It was written by T.S. Stribling and called The Governor of Cap Asia. I had taken a year of sabbatical from Ohio University, where I teach, and I was traveling through the Caribbean. Our cruise ship sailed into the harbor of Haiti on a glorious morning. I was on deck, of course. In the chair next to me was an American who had joined the cruise at last port, representative of that go-getter type so common to our country. That morning, for the first time, we talked.
Well, Professor, we'll be docking, son. You know, I'll bet dollars to donuts the Marines will be recalled here in Haiti within 6 months.
The Marines recalled?
Yeah.
I didn't know they'd ever been sent away, Mr.
Waterman's the name. Henry Clay Waterman. Insurance is my racket. That's why I'm down here. Going to close our offices in Cap Haitien and Port-au-Prince. Cancel all outstanding policies. We're through. Finished. Finny!
That sounds rather drastic, Mr. Waterman.
Yeah, that's the right word for it, Professor. Drastic. We insurance boys are pretty wise birds, brother. And that's what we think about the future of the Black Republic.
Indeed?
Yep. Things have been getting steadily worse ever since the Marines packed up. This new Governor Boisrand took over. He's a native. Pure-blooded Caco. No property safe here anymore. My company's been paying out and paying out.
Did you say Boisrand? That's very interesting, Mr. Waterman. I have a cablegram which I received several days ago. Perhaps you could throw some light on it. See, here it is.
Professor Henry Pajoli, you are a corresponding member of the American Society for Psychological Research. Report at once to Aristide Boisrand of Cap Haitien. Fees no object. Signed, Dr. Vauquer, Minister, Department of Health. I wonder what those two crooks want with you.
Crooks?
Surest thing you know. I've had dealings with both of them. Boisrand's a big bear of a man, self-made. Gotta admire him somehow. Vauquer's a half-breed, part French. Been an actor, I believe. Studied medicine abroad. Now he's Minister of Health. Boisrand's right-hand man.
But you said they were crooks.
Well, I put it up to you, one man to another. We kept getting claims for plantations destroyed. When we complained to Boisrand, he shrugs and says, what can he do? Says a cactus leader up in the hills does it. If you ask me, there ain't no such bird. Or if there is, his name's Boisrand.
I see. Or, Rather, I will see.
If I was you, Professor, I wouldn't step off this ship. That place ain't safe.
You mean there's danger?
Yeah.
But you're landing on...
Oh, well, that's different, Professor. I'm out for business. You're just out for science.
Yes, that's right, Mr. Waterman. I'm just out for science. It's strange what a man will do just for science.
This is Professor Poggioli I'm addressing, n'est-ce pas?
Yes, I am Professor Poggioli.
Ah, evidently you received my cable, monsieur. Allow me to present myself. I'm Dr. Vauquier, Minister of Health.
How do you do, sir?
Oh, so sorry you were annoyed by these ragamuffins, Professor. The hand of our government is too lax, I'm afraid. A recent change in policing, you understand. Ah, but I must not keep you out here in this heat. Have you presented your bags at customs yet?
No, not yet. I'll run right over and
do
it now.
No, please, Professor. Do not walk. Come, I will drive you, monsieur.
You have beautiful country, Dr. Vauquier. That magnificent marketplace, the color, the native artwork.
And yet, monsieur, already our native racial development is in danger of being completely wiped out and replaced by routine American civilization. Like those empty tin oil cans our women now carry on their heads instead of the hand-woven baskets of their ancestors.
What we call progress, Dr. Vauquier. But it's all in the laps of the gods. Individuals can do nothing in the major trend of racial developments.
That is where I disagree, Professor. In fact, it is precisely why you are here in Haiti today.
I? Surely you're joking.
No, not at all, monsieur. My country stands today at a crossroads. American authority has been withdrawn. We have our native government. Can we keep it so?
But what have I to do with that, doctor?
You will see, monsieur. Our hills are full of insurrectionary bands called Cacos. These rebel leaders keep a hold over our people through superstition. Our people call them Papalois. They follow them, obey them, and so rebel against the organized government.
I would like to help, Dr. Vauquier, but I can't imagine one man especially having an effect on an old folk belief such as voodooism.
The problem is not so wide, monsieur. It is individual. There is right now one Caco's leader who calls himself Jean Lafonde. If you could explain the seemingly magical effect he produces, unmask him as a faker, that would break his hold on our people and make them good citizens of Governor Boisron.
You must be very devoted to Boisron, Doctor.
Devoted? That is not quite the right word, monsieur. He is remarkable, a native. In fact, he was once himself a Caco's leader, and so powerful a one that the authorities of Port-au-Prince had to recognize his authority and make him governor.
I see. An interesting road to political preferment. And now he needs help to hold his position. But what about his friends here? You, for example.
Friends? Men like Aristide Boisron do not have friends, monsieur. They are followers, admirers, sycophants.
But surely there is at least one who loves him.
You are a sentimentalist, monsieur, like all Americans. But in this case, you're right. There is one who loves Boisron, who would die for him. His dog, Lobo.
And you, Dr. Vauquier, are a cynic like most Frenchmen. I'm right, am I not? You are French.
Part French, part Asian, monsieur. But I have been educated in Paris and lived there most of my life.
Indeed, doctor. This experience of yours with a man like Boisron stamped must be fascinating.
That is the word, monsieur. Fascinating. But here, you shall see for yourself. Here is the gate to the governor's mansion.
It is you at last. And this I take it, is Professor Poggioli. Come in, Professor. Come in.
The professor is charmed with Haiti, Monsieur le Gouverneur. We've had a most interesting discussion on racial development.
Stop wasting time, Vauquier. Monsieur Poggioli, no doubt, is in a hurry. Down, Lobo, down, mon beau chien. Qu'est-ce qu'avez-vous, mon ami? Bien, good dog. Now, you have told him, Vauquier. He has told you what I want of you, Professor.
About this Kakos leader? Yes, Governor Poissant. And one thing is very strange. Why do you need me? Why don't you go up into the hills and eliminate this Jean Lafont?
Because I cannot get at him, Monsieur Pozzuoli. Move against him where I will. He reads my mind and is not there. It is like chasing jack-o'-lantern. He knows where I will strike before I touch my sword.
You don't mean he actually reads your thoughts?
But of course, he is voodoo, monsieur. If he could not read my mind, I would catch him at once with my ruralis, shoot him on sight. I know the mountains as well as the throne. I can fight better than he can. But monsieur, he is Papalois. No one can do anything against him.
You say no one, Governor. You've sent others?
Pablo, monsieur, I have sent many spies to his camp. They pretend to be deserters from my ruralis, and so they get there.
And what happens?
Écoutez-vous. Mon Dieu. Wait. You shall see for yourself. These are the latest spies I sent to Lafranc. Saint-Jean, Felipe, viens!
Good heavens! Look at their heads! Their ears! They've cut off!
They always come back so, monsieur.
Quiet! Quiet! Saint-Jean, Felipe, viens! We will question you. You will answer. Now, Monsieur Pozzuoli, see what you can learn.
Your name is Saint-Jean?
Oui, monsieur.
You went to the Cacus camp as a spy?
Oui, monsieur. Quiet at night like a snake, monsieur. No one knew I...
And when did you arrive?
Sun up, Excellency.
You didn't go alone, Saint-Jean?
No, monsieur. These others, they went with me. They, too, were spies. The deserters, they did not come back.
You saw this leader, this Jean Lafont?
Oui, Excellency. He is Papalois, a great, tall man with a knife stuck through his arm.
Oh, come, Saint-Jean. No man can live with a knife stuck through his arm.
Oh, but he is Papalois, Excellency. With my own eyes, I saw the knife. The point came out so much on the back.
All right, Saint-Jean, you saw the knife. Then what did he do?
We walked to him through many cacos. Then he took a drop of our blood and swallowed it. That gave him power over us.
Yes, yes. Then what happened?
Then he cut off my ears and sent me back.
Yes, but what about the other men, the true deserters? Did he cut off their ears?
But no, Excellency. When their blood reached his heart, he knew they were true cacos. And he knew I was a spy.
Listen, Saint-Jean, when did this Papalois know you were a spy?
When my drop of blood...
Oh, never mind your drop of blood. Forget that. When did he come up to you and say, Saint-Jean, you are a spy. I am going to cut off your ears.
Never, never. He did not speak. He did not cut them off. He just wished them off. He is Papalois.
No, never mind that, Saint-Jean. Just tell me what happened after the
me
blood.
Me and the guard went to a jaguar, a little house he left me by myself. I sat down, then my ears fell off, and I went home.
I see. Now tell me, Saint-Jean, what time was it when you left the Caco camp?
The sun was straight up, Excellency.
About noon?
Oui, monsieur.
Then look, Saint-Jean. You reached this camp at sunrise. You left it at noon. You must have stayed there for 6 hours. What did you do in that time?
No, I did not stay. I went away at once.
You see, Boisson, the man is lying or suffering from the illusions. He admits that he spent 6 hours in the camp before he...
Monsieur, now I made it jump to the top of the world all in a minute. I saw him do it. He is Papalois.
Enough, Allez, take them away. You, Vauquier, go with them. Spread the word that Monsieur Pozzuoli, the great American voodoo inspector, will go to Jean Lefranc's camp to see if he is a real Papalois.
This is ridiculous, Boisron. I'm no voodoo doctor going around making charms. I'm...
You are brave, monsieur, to be angry with me. You will be brave enough to go to this Caco's camp. He will be expecting you.
You mean you actually think that message will reach Lafranc?
Capacien, monsieur, is like a spider's web. Touch one thread, And it all quitters.
Yes, but look here. I can't possibly go to this Lafrance camp without a guide.
He will have men posted to watch out for you.
Yes, but he can't allow me in his camp, a psychologist, coming with the avowed purpose of exposing his tricks.
If he does not, monsieur, every Negro on the island will say at once, he is no true Papalois. He would not dare refuse you admittance.
Suppose he tried to cut off my ears to show his power.
Your ears? Do you hesitate to risk your ears for science? You will see what no white man has seen before.
There's no use in my going. The mystery is how he can pick out the spies from the true deserters. If I go to his camp alone...
I have thought of that, monsieur. I shall select two men to go with you. A genuine spy and a genuine deserter. You can see what happens to both of them.
You have two such men?
Naturally, monsieur. I have chosen the spy. A deserter can be picked up any place along the road.
The spy. Can you trust him?
With my life, monsieur. Nor will he be afraid of Jean Lafron. This is one man of whom you need have no doubt.
Very well. I'll do it. When do we leave?
Tonight. 2 hours after midnight. You will find a carriage waiting outside this gate. Take it. The driver has his orders. Now, you had better sleep, monsieur. It may be long before you sleep again.
Monsieur.
What? Who are you?
It is 2 o'clock. The carriage. She wait for you.
Oh, yes, yes. Very well. Oh, here you are. You are waiting for me?
Oui, monsieur.
Are you alone? Is no one to go with us?
Don't know, monsieur.
Oh, that's strange. Well, let's go. Driver, weren't you supposed to stop somewhere and pick up another man?
I do not know, monsieur. I was told to pick up white man at governor's house, drive him 11 kilometers out on Wamente Road. That is all I know, monsieur.
Here is the place, monsieur.
That must be some mistake. It's black as pitch.
No mistake, monsieur. This is the place.
Hey, men come. I go. White man. I smell white man.
Are you the boys who are going to take me to Jean Lafrance's camp?
No.
I want to go to the Carcross camp. I am the voodoo inspector.
Oh. White man, we go Kakos camp. You come along with us.
We've been walking a long way. How far away from Lafrance camp now?
Hush, white man. Save your breath for climbing. We go up into mountain.
Who goes that?
Voodoo inspector.
You gotta climb now, white man.
Great heavens. I can never climb that. Why, it's 30 feet of sheer stone cliff.
You will climb. I go first.
No, I can't do it.
Here, take my hand. I'll lift you.
Hello. Hey, look at that. Who does that? Who does that good?
Bullseye, you are mad to risk it.
Quiet. Save your breath. We're almost there now.
Careful.
Now, what? Hey, we're on top. On top. You hear that, Professor? Voodoo drums. We're almost there. I'm sorry you recognize me. But well, now listen quickly. We may be separated.
First, tell me, why didn't you drive out with me?
I walk. It was better so.
Barefooted? Your feet must be torn to ribbons.
You forget, Pozzoli. I am a Kakos.
Yes, but...
Never mind that now. Listen to me. Whatever happens, do not interfere. Do you understand?
But suppose Lafrance recognizes you, too.
He will recognize me. I know that.
But then...
Quiet! Someone is coming.
You! Voodoo inspector?
Yes.
Over there, deserters. You come with me.
Look, there's the altar of a flame. What a crowd. There must be hundreds.
My men, deserters, All of them. They will pay for this.
But where is La Prouse?
Wait. There.
Right through the flame. Clever devil, that.
Professor, how does he do that?
It's a theatrical trick. Illusion, they call it. I'd have to examine it more closely to discover how it works. By Jove. La Prouse wearing a red mask. It covers his whole head.
Yes, yes. No one has ever seen his face. Watch. Watch. There goes the first of our men. You see, at the altar. Lafon picks his arm with a knife. Look, now he's sucking the blood. Now I am next. Watch. See where they take me after.
No, Boisson. No, he will kill you. Come, run for your life.
You are easily frightened, monsieur. No, I have waited many moons for this chance. See, he beckons me. Adieu. I go.
Where did they take my friend, the big giant black man who came with me?
Don't know, master. Don't know.
You, old woman, where is the place they keep the new men?
You do not know, monsieur. The devil does very little for you.
Oh, hang the devil. Where is this man?
I see big man, monsieur, sitting in old chair. Papa Lebois. He speak with him. The big man fights. His heart rages like great fire. He can do nothing. He is like great drunk bear. Now, your big friend wears flowers on his head. They bloom like red roses.
Good heaven, Bordura. They've got him. Tell me, you old she-devil, where is he?
In one of the jaguars. Go, voodoo inspector. Put the ears back on his head.
Thank God I found you. What have they done to you?
This thing, dog. I fight. Dear, bottle.
So that's it. So what's happening? That's how he got the truth out of those spies, poor devils. They never had a chance. The drug removes all inhibitions, makes them tell the truth. But now they must know who you are. You must get out of here.
No, you wait. He has his chance. My turn soon.
What a crazy fire.
The Ruralis. My Ruralis. Let me out! Let me out!
Oswald, that man behind you, he has a knife.
Papa Lois! At last, my 200 on your neck, you put up your dog.
Stop. Get up, man. He's dead.
Monsieur, they did good job, my little Alice, eh?
Yes, very thorough. But how did your troops ever manage to find their way here?
It was Lobo.
Lobo?
Oui, monsieur, my dog, my faithful Lobo. I knew if I could once march into this Caco's camp barefooted, Lobo would follow me and lead my men to Jean Lefranc.
You still call him Jean Lefranc? Why? Didn't you know?
Know what, monsieur? That he was Papa Lois, and that I killed him with my bare hands.
Then you haven't looked under the devil's mask he wore?
Mask? Pablo? No, monsieur, no.
And yet, you almost guessed. They told me he had been an actor in France. I was sure of it later when I talked to Saint-Jean. Those last 6 hours of his smacked too strongly of scopolamine. Not a native drug, but a European one. A European doctor, a European actor, and a member of your own household.
Oui, monsieur. Jean Lefranc. Papa Lois was Dr. Vaquier.
Well, Professor Pagioli, your Boisrand was quite a guy.
Yes, Aristide Boisrand was one of the greatest men I've ever known. For him to challenge the great voodoo took more than physical courage.
If you don't mind my saying so, I think that we should have had him here instead of you.
Now, why did you say it was your most famous case?
I said it was the case that gained me my greatest reputation. You see, Mr. Wright, I'm not particularly interested in my reputation as a detective, but as a scientist.
Well, now, just how did this case in which you were, well, forgive me, outshone, how did it help you in your scientific pursuits?
Well, because of it, I am now known throughout the length and breadth of the Caribbean as a great patois. I have access to rites and ceremonies denied to white men. Opportunities may open for me to study and investigate one of the most fascinating of all civilizations. You see, Mr. Wright, I'm not a great detective, but I am a darn good scientist.
Murder Clinic, on Tuned to Yesterday, a relatively rare broadcast from that short-lived Mutual series from August 11th, 1942. You're listening to An Hour of Mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And now on to Box 13 from film star Alan Ladd's production company. He does star next in this episode from November 7th, 1948, called Triple Cross.
Box 13, with the star of Paramount Pictures, Alan Ladd, as Dan Holliday.
Hey, look, boss, look at this. An ad in the Star Times out-of-town newspaper. Yeah.
Box 13, adventure wanted. We'll go any place, do anything. Well, this looks like the right answer, Tony.
Yeah.
I think I'll write a letter to Box 13.
The letter was postmarked from a city in Nevada. It came airmail, special delivery to Box 13 and me. It sounded like a great chance to grab a change of scenery and maybe a little fun. Fun? Brother, how wrong could I be?
And now, back to Box 13. And Dan Holliday's newest adventure, Triple Cross.
Just run an advertisement in the Star Times, one that reads, Adventure Wanted, will go any place, do anything, and see what you get. A lot of them can be interesting, like the one I listened to Susie read. The one that came airmail, special delivery from Nevada.
Enclosed is enough money to buy you a plane ticket to Los Meros. You want adventure? All right, come to Los Meros. Register at the Paradise Hotel. Wait in your room until you're contacted.
And that's all it says, Susie?
That's all, Mr. Holliday. There's not even a signature, even. It's what's called an ominous letter.
What kind of a letter, Susie?
Ominous. That means it's not signed by anybody.
The word you mean is anonymous.
Oh.
But you could be right after all. Well, Susie, lock up the office and look for me when you see me with a new plot and a nice tan. A new plot and a nice tan, I said. I got the plot, but the tan almost turned into a beautiful white pallor, the kind that goes well with lilies. The plane trip was smooth. The trip from Mariport to the Paradise Hotel was nice and easy. And the hotel itself? Well, it was the only one I could remember that looked like the ads in the travel folders. Oddly enough, there was a room reserved for me in my name. Okay, somebody checked and found out who I was. I explored the suite, thinking maybe I'd get a lead on what this was all about, but it was just a fancy set of rooms, all newly decorated. I sat down, and then about a half hour later... Come in.
Message for you, Mr. Holliday.
Oh, thanks. Here you are.
Oh, thank you.
Just a minute. Who gave this to you?
A man, sir.
What kind of a man? What'd he look like?
Oh, just a man, sir.
Oh, I see. A head, two eyes, nose, two ears, and a mouth. That his description?
Yes, sir. That's exactly what he looked like.
Good. Then I'll know him when I see him. Oh, did he ask for an answer?
No, sir. He just told me to bring the envelope to you. Will that be all, sir?
Huh? Oh, yes, thanks. Well, two $100 bills and a message that said, buy a red carnation in the flower shop and put it in your lapel. After dinner, go to the casino roulette table. buy $200 in chips and put them on number 18. If you win, walk away, wait 10 minutes, and put half the winnings on number 22. After you play, wait in the casino. So, with a carnation in my lapel, I bought $200 in chips and walked to the roulette table. There weren't many players. It was a little too early for the big crowd. So I waited a minute and watched the play. Took a look at the croupier, but I might as well have been in Timbuktu. He didn't give me a tumble. Okay, the best way to see what was going to happen was to see. I shoved a whole 200 on number 18. One or two of the other players placed bets, and then...
No more bets, please. No more bets. Number 18, red and even. Your chips, sir.
The croupier shoved the winnings across to me. I watched his face. If he had any expression, it was on the soles of his shoes. Well, maybe $7,000 win was common around here. I left the table, sat down, and did a little problem in arithmetic, which figured out to be $126,000. That's what I'd have if number 22 came up. And, brother, it looked from where I sat as though it would. The 10 minutes went by, and I walked back to the table. Waited until the wheel stopped.
Number 16, red and even. Place your bets, please, ladies and gentlemen.
Slowly, I shoved 3,500 in chips to number 22. This time, the others around the wheel did look. 3,500 to 35 to 1. Then the wheel began to slow up.
No more bets, ladies and gentlemen. No more bets, please.
That croupier was as cold as the floor of a mausoleum. Somebody dropped a pin, and I heard it hit the floor. The white ball click, click, clicked its way until...
Number 22, black and even. Your chips, sir.
I cashed in the chips, and there I sat, with $126,000 tucked away in my inside coat pocket. Somebody had that wheel fixed for a killing. I began to wish I was back in my office. I didn't like it. A crooked play. Why? Who? I made up my mind to go to the owner of the place and wash my hands of the whole thing when...
Oh, there you are, Mr. Holliday. I've been looking for you. I have a message for you.
Yeah?
Well, it's verbal this time, Mr. Holliday.
Oh, what is it?
You're to go into the bar and wait.
Is that all?
Yes, sir.
The same man gave you this message?
Yes, sir.
Did he still have a head, two eyes, a nose, and two ears?
Yes, sir.
All right, here you are, kid.
Oh, thank you.
You know, if this keeps up much longer, you'll be able to retire on my tips alone.
Thank you, Mr. Holliday. Will that be all?
How much did this character give you to forget what he looked like?
Well, nothing, sir. Nothing at all.
And a smart boy like you should have taken a good look the second time.
Huh?
Especially since I asked about him after the first message.
Oh, he was big, dark, a little mustache, and he had a little white scar over his right eye.
Will you take $5 for that information?
That's all right, Mr. Holliday. No charge for that service.
Good boy. I'll see you later.
Yes, sir, Mr. Holliday.
I walked toward the bar, wondering what was coming next. I didn't like that fortune burning the cloth in my pocket. The bar was like my suite. Fancy, rich, and expensive. I climbed up on one of the stools, and a bartender came over and...
Yes, sir. May I serve you, sir?
Got any ginger ale?
Yes, sir. What with, sir?
Oh, by itself. Just a glass of ginger ale.
Just a ginger ale?
Uh-huh. You see, I like the bubbles.
Champagne has bubbles, too.
But they're still around the next day. Just a ginger ale.
Yes, sir. Of course.
Excuse me. Is someone sitting here?
Oh, no. I don't think so.
Thank you.
Here you are, sir. Ginger ale.
Thanks.
The usual, please.
Okay. Yes, sir. May I?
You got a light?
Of course.
Thank you.
Don't mention it.
Here you are.
Thanks. Why do you drink ginger ale?
I like it. Why do you drink martinis?
Same reason, I guess. It's a brilliant conversation, isn't it?
Well, I've heard better.
You're not very friendly, are you?
A Boy Scout is always friendly.
And does good turns. So I hear.
Do you want to be helped across the street?
All right. I'll shut up.
I took a good look at her. There was something scared looking about her. She was nervous. Well, so was I, because the minutes were passing and I still had that money, and I wanted to get rid of it. But I wondered about the girl, whether she had any part in this. I watched out of the corner of my eye. She picked up her bag, reached for a lipstick, and then...
Oh, clumsy.
So it's true what they say about women's handbags. You get the stuff on the bar, I'll pick up the kitchen sink off the floor.
I'm so sorry. Did the powder spill on you?
No, it's all right. Yeah. Here you are.
The mirror didn't break, did it?
Nope, you're still good for 7 years more.
Thanks. Thanks ever so much.
I told you I was a good boy, Scott.
You have a nice smile.
Want a toothpaste commercial to go with it?
Now, don't be nasty.
I'm sorry. I guess I'm just as nervous as you are.
Let's talk about something else.
She chattered away. And
it really is.
I listened with half an ear.
It?
Once in a while, threw in a yes so or a no. And the clouds began to gather. The mirror at the back of the bar went back and forth. The people got bigger, then shrank to midgets. Somebody drove a plane through my head. It buzzed around and made a bad landing on my brain. Then...
There you are. Feeling better now?
Oh.
You'll be all right. Just lie there, take it easy.
Sure, I... Hey, I'm in my room.
Of course. We brought you here.
We?
I'm the hotel physician, Mr. Holliday.
Oh, what happened?
And just a fainting spell, nothing serious.
Fainting spell? What are you talking about?
They're fainting spells. Your wife told me you get them.
My what told you what?
No, just lie back.
Whose wife said what?
Your wife. She's got to have a prescription filled.
Now, listen, Doc, I... Hand me my coat, will you?
It's better if you lie here.
It's better if you hand me my coat. Give it to me.
Oh, very well. There you are. What's the matter?
Was my wife in this room?
Of course. She came up with me.
Uh-huh. Doc, what would you do with $126,000?
What? That's an odd question. What would you do with it?
I don't know. Because I haven't got it anymore. So there I was, $126,000 in the red. It was meant to be taken from me, then somebody was working it the hard way. Sure, the girl slipped something in my ginger ale when I picked up the stuff that fell out of her handbag. She took the money. All right, I wanted no more of it. I was going to head for the nearest exit, running, not walking, when... Come in.
You Holliday?
Yeah. Do I know you?
Call me Tony. I'm the guy who wrote the Box 13.
Oh. All right, goodbye, Tony.
Sit down.
What's the idea?
Funny, I was going to ask you that.
We're playing 20 questions. Let's skip the other 18, Tony.
I got a big one left. Where's the dough?
You tell me.
Give it to me.
Well, I didn't like him. I didn't like the gun he was playing with either. And I didn't like the little white scar over his right eye or the little black mustache. I was willing right then and there to cross him off my friendship list. But I told him what happened.
It's a great story. Ain't heard one like it since I read fairy tales.
Well, I don't care if you believe it or not.
You got no regard for your health, Holliday.
Look, Tony, I'm leaving this place
You'll
now.
You'll be too heavy to carry out if you take one more step. That's better. Now, what kind of a frame is this?
Once more, you tell me. I played a crooked wheel downstairs. I don't like that.
You got adventure, didn't you?
I don't want anything that's crooked.
Look who's talking. Who was the girl?
Believe it or not, I never saw her before.
What did she look like?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Ever try to take a good look at anyone in that bar downstairs? It's too dark to even see a lighted match.
You're smart, Holliday. The game with the girl is neat, awful neat. You get the dough, play doggo. Act like the girl slipped you, Mickey. Later she turns up with the dough and you two split.
Now talk sense, Tony. I didn't know why I came to Los Moros in the first place. I didn't know how I was going to get that money. How would I have time to dream up that frame with a girl?
Yeah, I never thought of that. Okay, Holliday, maybe you're telling it straight.
Okay. Now can I go?
No. You get that money back first, then you can go.
I don't think I'll stay for the ninth inning, Tony.
The game has not started yet, but you get that dough.
How?
That's your problem, but get it.
Look, Tony, I'm backing out of this. You know I can go to the sheriff.
No, you won't. Because there'll be a tail on you from now on out.
One move like you're going to the law. Understand?
Okay. Okay, I get it.
And there'll be somebody in this room to see that you don't use the phone. You'll be covered like a pool table, Holiday.
What if I can't find the girl? What if I can't get the money back?
The boss will be awful mad.
And?
There are worse places than Los Maros to spend a lifetime, if you live.
Ever have one of those dreams in which you try to run away from something and can't? Well, this one, with my eyes wide open, was really something. Tony and I went downstairs. Two other characters detached themselves from chairs when Tony nodded at them. Brother, I was covered. It looked hopeless. With Tony not far behind, I asked the doctor if he'd ever seen the girl who said she was my wife. Well, there was no dice there. Then I remembered something. I told Tony I was going back into the bar.
Bar? What for?
Now, look, Tony. Let me do it my way. I'm the one that's on the spot, so let me play it the way I want.
Okay. I'll watch, and don't try for a quick steal, because the boys outside know who to look for. Go ahead.
Thanks. What would I do without you, Tony?
I don't know, because you're not going to be without me. Remember, I'll be watching.
Yes, sir. May I serve you? Well, feeling better, sir?
Well, much. Where were you when I fainted?
At the other end of the bar, sir.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So you were.
It wasn't our ginger ale, sir.
No, it wasn't. I just have a loose head, and when I shake it, it comes off.
May I serve you something, sir?
Yes. An answer to a question.
Well, what's that, sir?
Who was the girl who sat down next to me?
I don't know, sir.
Oh, yes, you do.
I beg your pardon, sir.
Quit the sir business. You knew that girl.
Why do you say that?
Because when she sat down, she asked for the usual, and you brought her a martini. And you said okay when she asked you.
What does that prove?
The martini proves you knew who she was. The okay means she wasn't a guest of the hotel. No bartender, as polite as you are, would say okay to a lady guest. That makes sense?
Why do you want to know who she is?
Does that make any difference?
Yeah, because I wouldn't want to see her in trouble.
I'll try to keep her out of it.
I won't tell you.
Ever see a picture of Alexander Hamilton?
Hmm? What are you talking about?
Well, here's one. And funny enough, it's on a $10 bill. In fact, his picture's on all five of these bills.
Yeah. Her name's Kathy Lee. I think she has a place at the Las Palmas Courts.
Thanks. Put these pictures in frames, will you? I found the Las Palmas Courts. And, of course, Tony behind me all the way. The name list in front said Kathy Lee lived in number 8. I looked around before I turned in the walk. Yeah, Tony was closer to me than varnish on a tabletop. I found number 8 and stopped for a second. Looked for a phone line, but there wasn't any. I knocked at the door. No answer. I tried it again. Then I heard Tony whisper from the shadows.
Try the door, Holiday.
I did. It was unlocked. Tony coached from the sidelines.
Go on in.
I went in and closed the door behind me. It was dark. I decided to risk a call. Kathy? Kathy? Kathy Lee? She wasn't there. I fumbled my way to what felt like a dresser and a lamp. Turned it on, and what I saw made me turn that light off fast.
What's the matter?
She's dead.
What are you talking about?
You heard me. She's dead.
You sure?
Well, go in and look.
You go back in and look for that dope. Go on.
Now look, Tony, I don't know any more of this. That poor kid's dead, murdered. I want you to call the sheriff.
No, you don't. I said you go back in there and look for that dough.
You look for it.
Leave my fingerprints all over the place. Now you go back in there and hunt.
Don't be a sap. Whoever killed her took the money. Don't you see that?
Maybe. But we'll play this angle all the way. Now stop talking and get in there.
I hated to turn on that light, but I had to. I didn't look at her. I looked through the room. Then I found something. A plane ticket to San Francisco, leaving that night. And a boat ticket for South America. They were in an envelope, but the information on the envelope said there would be two reservations. I put it back where I found it because I didn't want Tony to find it on me. And there was something else. A locket with a man's picture in it. I took it off his chain and shoved it in my pocket, then I left.
Well, Helene?
It's not there. I told you it wouldn't be.
Stand still. Back toward me.
A frisk, Tony? You don't trust me, do you?
Shut up.
No, I told you.
Who killed her?
Find that out and you'll know where the money went.
Come on.
What's so funny?
Holiday, right now I wouldn't want to be in your shoes.
Tony was right. People at the casino saw me win that money, and somebody must have seen the girl with me. Then I got the Mickey, the money was taken, the girl killed. Who did it? Me, Dan Holiday. Because the girl clipped me for the money. Well, this was a beautiful frame. Any art gallery in the country would be proud to hang it. But I knew something Tony didn't. The plane and boat tickets. Two seats. One for Kathy and her murderer. Somebody who left her tickets in her bungalow to make it look as though she was in on the $100,000 job by herself. Sure. Now her killer was taking a plane. In 1 hour. Then a boat to South America. I could have told Tony, but I wanted to wrap it up myself. Besides, I wanted to get the whole thing to the law. On the way back to the hotel, I figured something out for myself. But I'd have to see the boss of the casino, and I thought I knew how to do that without Tony tagging along. The casino was full. I stopped. Tony stopped.
What's the idea? What now?
I've got to think.
Up to your room.
No.
You want to get hurt?
Sure, go ahead. Shoot me. Now. In front of all these people. You know, Tony, you wouldn't get 10 feet.
Smart, ain't you? Okay, what's now?
I'm going to play blackjack.
What?
Want to watch? I sat at the blackjack table. I had as much interest in the game as Aunt Mamie back in Iowa, who never saw a deck of cards in her life. But I had an idea, and I played it for all it was worth. Look, dealer.
Yes?
I didn't like that last deal.
I beg your pardon, sir.
I said I didn't like that last deal.
Well, return your money, sir.
Never mind the money. Who runs this place?
Hey, what is that guy trying to put on over there?
It worked. In 3 seconds, I was surrounded by muscle boys, and Tony was hotter than a New York sidewalk in August. But he couldn't touch me. A minute later, I sat across the table from the owner of the casino. I told him what happened, and when I finished, he stared at me and said...
You're trying to tell me somebody let you win that money on my wheel?
I am?
You're crazy. The wheel's straight.
But you know I won that money.
Sure I do. Anytime $100,000 slides across, I know it.
But this time it was fixed. The croupier was tipped I was to win.
Wait a minute. Marty, send Frankie up here right away. Huh? Oh. Okay, forget it.
What's the matter?
Frankie, the croupier. Went off duty just after you won. He's not back yet.
And he won't come back. Now, somebody planned to take the house this evening for that money. Somebody who couldn't risk getting it himself. So I'm the logical one. No one knows me here. I'd look like just another player. Later, Mr. Fixit plans to pick up the money and beat it. Who? Someone besides yourself who could get to the croupier and bribe him to fix the wheel. Got any ideas?
Yeah. One. My partner.
Well, that's it, then. It's got to be.
But the girl, she doped you. That was a hard way to get the money from you.
Listen, I've got an idea, but I'm a little cramped for room. Some of your partner's boys, particularly a guy named Tony, are glued to me. Get some of your boys to shake them off, and I'll bring that money back to you.
How do you know where it is?
I know.
Okay, Holiday. But remember, fast play, and I'll find you if it takes the rest of my life.
It's a deal. Now, how about the boys?
They won't follow you. Marty, that guy will leave my office. Some mugs are tailing him. Stop him. Got it? Good. All right, Holiday. You're on first base. Go ahead.
I was sure he'd be at the airport, and I wasn't wrong. He was sitting in the shadows on the outside. I walked over to him, and he looked up.
Holiday,
I thought you would be.
Thought I'd be framed, huh, Frankie?
What are you doing here?
I've got a message from Kathy Lee.
Kathy? She's...
You ought to know. You killed her.
You're crazy.
Not only that, you've got $126,000 in that bag. $126,000 that looked like easy money.
Shut up.
That money doesn't mean a thing. It's the girl who counts, the girl who was willing to do what you told her to do. The girl you triple-crossed and killed after you double-crossed your boss who bribed you to fix the wheel.
It's too bad you're so smart, Holiday.
It's too bad you led with that right, Frankie. Somebody call the police to come and clean this up.
The croupier was... Oh, please hurry, Mr. Holiday. I want to hear the ending.
All right, Susie, all right. What do you want to know?
Well, how did you guess that Kathy Lee was the croupier's girl?
Well, her locket had his picture in it.
Oh, they should have given you the money as a reward.
No, thanks, Susie. They can have it.
But there's one thing I don't understand, Mr. Holiday.
And that's?
You didn't get a tan at all. You're just as pale as when you left.
Oh, $126,000. A murder and a tan, too, she wants. Good night, Susie.
Next week, same time, Alan Ladd stars as Dan Holiday in Box 13.
Box 13, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 7th of November, 1948, on the Mutual Broadcasting System and Alan Ladd's own production company, Mayfair Syndication. That brings to a close this hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden era. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levanier. Thanks for listening.